Hello everyone and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show on Myeloma. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor at Cure Talk and Cure Panel, joining you from India, and I welcome all of you this evening to a discussion on multiple myeloma. This is our live on-air support group meeting headed by myeloma survivor, author, and advocate Pat Killingsworth. Cure Panel's on-air myeloma support group meets every month on the Cure Panel Talk Show. The show is broadcast live on Blog Talk Radio. Before we begin with the meeting, I would like to mention that on 7th November at 6 p.m. in our Yoga Talk series, we are having three myeloma survivors sharing their stories on how yoga helped them through chemotherapy, stem cell transplants, and continued treatments. You can register for the talk by mailing me, priya@trialex.com. In our last meeting in September, we had myeloma survivor Paula Van Ripper share her myeloma journey with us. In today's meeting, we are discussing survival rates. Do they help to improve myeloma life expectancy? With Dr. Craig Hoffmeister of Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center and Gary Peterson, Cure Panel Talk Show's co-host and editor of MyelomaSurvival.com. Dr. Craig Hoffmeister is Assistant Professor of Medicine at the Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center, Arthur G. James Cancer Hospital, and Richard J. Solow Research Institute. Dr. Hoffmeister received his medical degree from the Ohio State University and completed his internship, residency, and fellowship training at Loyola University Medical Center and Loyola Cardinal Bernardin Cancer Center in Illinois. He is board certified in internal medicine, hematology, and medical oncology. Dr. Hoffmeister's clinical and research interests include multiple myeloma and blood and marrow transplantation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hoffmeister.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Our next guest is Gary Peterson, who is editor of MyelomaSurvival.com, and he will be sharing with us the work done on his site, MyelomaSurvival.com, and his experience through his quest for collating survival data from hospitals and research institutions from across the nation. His website is one of the best sources for myeloma survival data and life expectancy by specialists and hospitals. Welcome to the show, Gary. The meeting is hosted by Pat Killingsworth, and supporting him is myeloma survivor and advocate Cynthia Schmulibisky. Welcome, Pat and Cynthia. All listeners may please press one on your keypad if you have a question for Dr. Hoffmeister or the support group leaders, and we will bring you live on air. Pat will now begin the meeting. Pat, you're on air.
Thank you, Priya. And if you would, Priya, if somebody calls in, if you can just stop us at a convenient spot, and let's give them a chance to participate since it's our on-air support group. And I'm really encouraged by how many people have been listening. Priya says that after a month's time, thousands of people have clicked on the link to listen to the broadcast, and that's very rewarding, and I'm glad we can reach so many people, and that's the idea, but we want to give everyone a chance to share, and so that's why we're doing this a little differently than our normal Myeloma Cure Panel broadcast. But I'm excited today to introduce Gary Peterson, who host those broadcasts, and Gary has a pet project, and he's spending a lot of time trying to compile statistics on overall survival by institution, by cancer center or hospital, and he's finding that there can be a big difference from institution to institution, and that myeloma patients are significantly better off going to well-known treatment centers, and so he's doing some wonderful work, and we're happy to have him. But I should start with our special guest, Dr. Hoffmeister, there at Ohio State. I'm a University of Wisconsin grad, but I'm not going to hold that against you. And Dr. Hoffmeister, could you start just talk a little bit about what you do and what's your day? You probably don't have a typical day, but what your day might be like and some of the research you're doing. For example, I understand that you're involved in some cutting-edge research involving something called the real virus. Could you just talk a little bit about what you do and what your day is like?
I'm what's called a clinician investigator. I see patients and write protocols and grants to support clinical trials, ideally doing something different and something better and something of value to patients. Our center is focused primarily on newer therapies, including immune therapies. You mentioned one of our trials with Reolysin, which is a infusible form of reovirus, which is an oncolytic virus being evaluated for the first time here at OSU in heme malignancies, specifically in myeloma. And also interested in basically new drugs and cellular therapies. So we'd like to, I think a lot of our institution's focus is trying to do things in some way differently, looking at new agents to harness the immune system without using any cytotoxic drugs. Even though we do a lot of autologous transplants, we love to avoid giving cytotoxic drugs whenever we can. So that's a short version.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's truly a goal we're shooting for, and so do you feel like you're getting closer?
I think we're getting a lot closer. You know, things that we're trying to do today using, you know, chimeric antigen receptors, using oncolytic viruses, using so-called PD-1 inhibitors or immune therapies just weren't available 20 years ago. And getting a chance to use them now is just such a privilege to try to treat cancer in a more targeted fashion.
That's good. And how much of your work is done with myeloma, blood cancers? Do you do work with other cancers?
No, this is all I focus on.
Okay. Wow. Thank you.
Happy to.
Thank you very much on behalf of the patient, my fellow patients and caregivers out there. Gary, could you just explain a little bit about your project and why you were so excited to talk with Dr. Hoffmeister today?
Sure. Well, Dr. Hoffmeister and I have been in conversation about getting some of his survival data, and you know, he's been instrumental in trying to spearhead that and to actually take it a lot further. But as far as my involvement, how I got into this at all was the fact that I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma in 2006. And I was presented with dialysis-dependent kidney failure. Tests that showed that my cancer had, you know, consumed my bone marrow to the tune of about 85% cancer load. I was initially treated at Mayo, and that day really saved my life. My daughter, Andrea Peterson, she's the editor on the health desk of the Wall Street Journal, and she had a lot of contacts, and so she did much of the research as far as her contacts were concerned to find me somebody who was skilled at multiple myeloma. And my own background, which had to do with developing measurement systems for operations engineering and quality improvements, I had assumed that I'd just be able to go out there and find survival metrics from various locations and just choose the one that was doing the best. But I was very wrong with regard to that, and I could only find two that had published data. Mayo published 33 months, and University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences published 7 years for overall survival. And so my daughter had done her own research and came up with the UAMS as a place to go. I went there. It served me well. I'm now 6 years in CR, and Dr. Bart Barlogi says it shouldn't be coming back, and I hope he's right. In retrospect, though, I found, and my daughter already knew this because of her research, that the life expectancy for a myeloma patient some 7 years ago with dialysis-dependent kidney failure was around 3 months. So I feel blessed to be here and feel compelled to give back to the myeloma patient community. It's because of this I took on the mission to obtain survival data and life expectancy performance measures by doctor and hospital for the myeloma patient community, and so that they could make more informed treatment choices, just like I did. I only had two to pick from. I now have 12 more that I've added, so now it's up to 14. And I've learned from this information that the 4- and 5-year survival rates for those locations that have provided information is 2 to 6 times better than that of the by the national provided by the National Cancer Institute. Their averages, are called Surveillance Epidemiology and End Result Program, or SEER for short, and they provide these statistics for about 30% of the total multiple myeloma patients in this country. The average SEER life expectancy is about 4 years, and those doctors who have provided, those myeloma specialists, have provided life expectancies of 8 to 14 years. What I found, and I think you and most of our group on the CURE panel, that you need a skilled multiple myeloma specialist to give you the best possible outcome, and that this disease is just far too complex for your local hematologist-oncologist, because they are just ill-equipped to treat this ever-moving target. Also on the site, I have a list of those people who I have vetted, doctors, and looked and find EA through reputation or just judgment-based that are myeloma specialists, and there's some 70 of those. And it's my hope that the efforts of Dr. Hoffmeister, which we're going to talk about today, or people like Consumer Reports that are just getting into finding cancer outcomes will put me out of business, and hopefully everybody will have the performance measures that they need so they can rationally make the decisions that I had to guess on way back when. Well, 7 years ago, it's not way back when. So that's pretty much what got me here, and I'm kind of on a mission, and that mission so far, you know, it seems like it's going slow, and hopefully Dr. Hoffmeister and people like him with his efforts can speed the process up significantly.
Gary, you're on a roll. How about, you had a question along these lines for Dr. Hoffmeister. Could you ask that, please?
Sure. Doctor, when we had first talked, one of the issues that I run up against all the time is that the data, for example, in business, you know, you have measures of everything, you know, there. And one of the measures that, you know, we use, or you use, and I think it's important, and that's one of the reasons that your facility is with, you know, the numbers, yeah, I haven't seen your numbers, you're going to provide those, but I know that you're going to have excellent results. And the reason is that you do a lot of clinical trials, and in clinical trials, just because the FDA requires that you measure the results, you know, with overall survival, progression-free survival, you know, and you have to have, each arm has to be randomized, that you do have measures. So because you have those, you do have, you know which program seems to be better than others. Now, your local oncologist doesn't necessarily have that. So net is that you have those as surrogates or substitutes for real hard data, something that you can use. So my question for you was, could I have your survival data? And you said, I'm working on it. So could you tell me a little bit about how you're working on your individual survival data, but not only that, you're taking this well beyond that and actually trying to do it for the entire state of Ohio and hopefully taking it even further than that.
Absolutely. So as Gary described, we have a website called ohiomyeloma.org. And really what we're trying to do is follow and be a resource for every patient with a plasma cell dyscrasia, essentially every patient with MGUS, smoldering myeloma, multiple myeloma, AL amyloidosis, light chain deposition disease, et cetera, et cetera. Anything along that spectrum, we would like to enroll in this trial. You can enroll online, and if you're diagnosed or treated in the state of Ohio, we want to follow you. And we absolutely agree that understanding what is going on with patients with myeloma is terribly important. And the University of Arkansas data has often been criticized as having excellent survivals, acknowledging that 85% of their patients are high socioeconomic class with low-risk disease. Clearly, the best of the best as far as patients go. And a lot of overall survival data that people present usually relates to their clinical trials or relates to, in general, a sunny view of things. And most institutions that publish their survival data will often publish data that is much better than the SEER average, which is the average across the nation. Well, we will describe to our patients that their average overall survival for all myeloma patients is much better than this SEER data, which approximates around 30% at 5 years. And we want to do much better than that, but we also want to make sure that we capture everyone. So we want to create the largest database of patients with myeloma and their precursors with the most depth ever really encountered. And the way we want to do that is make sure that we work together with other academic institutions within our state, so Cleveland Clinic, University of Cincinnati, working closely with the Ohio Department of Health, and try to capture everyone in the state and to look at every drug they ever receive, every lab test they ever have, and catalog it for their overall initial disease staging, risk prognostication, but also looking for what happens to them. So from an epidemiologic viewpoint here, our Ohio Myeloma Initiative wants to be able to not just know the overall survival, but be able to say, okay, I have 17p deleted myeloma, I'm hyperdiploid, and my ISS stage is stage 1. How many people do you have like me, and how did they do? A lot of the survival data available now doesn't allow you to essentially query it with data that is pertinent both to patients and researchers. And we want to have that level of query available up through a web portal and access to all our data. Now, right now, the web portal's not written. It's been designed, but hasn't been made live on our system in any way. And we are actually at a spot now of trying to make sure that even within our own institution that people don't get cherry-picked onto the registry, all myeloma patients or any precursor goes on, and anything that happens to them automatically gets sucked in. And I think a lot of the barriers for getting survival data and treatment data into databases is related to electronic medical records, not emphasizing yet a lot of the capabilities that are available and the push to grab this information in discrete fields. Doctors too often have notes that are not templated and don't allow for them to be quickly perused by a computer automatically at 2 in the morning and pushed into a database in discrete formats that allow patients, researchers, to look through this database. So a lot of our efforts from an epidemiologic perspective are from that viewpoint. Now, the Ohio Myeloma Initiative has multiple goals. We're looking from an epidemiologic standpoint to do good research and look at overall survival and what happens to patients. But we also have goals for patients who we want to be able to reach out to them ideally within 2 weeks of diagnosis and because that's a very disorienting time for patients who are often diagnosed by local oncologists. And as you've mentioned, you know, local oncologists usually have, on average, between 2 and 10 myeloma patients in their whole practice, certainly less than 5% of their practice, are often uncomfortable with myeloma. And I think this is a tough spot for myeloma patients to be put in. So we'd like to be able to have outreach efforts with all private practice physicians in the state to be able to tell patients, hey, there's educational resources available and there are other clinical trials available, and allow patients from a patient-centered view, say, okay, what clinical trials are available within 25 miles, within 50 miles, within 100 miles? What myeloma specialists are available in those same geographic distances? Again, we're trying to reach out to patients and have their point of view referenced from this website. And all of this is still waiting to really tick up, because a lot of our data is still very OSU-centric, and we still haven't gotten a vast majority of the Ohio population online yet. A lot of this stems from the fact that if you send somebody a newly diagnosed cancer patient information about a myeloma registry, they'll say, sure. But I think with all of the things that are required for to have multiple myeloma, signing up for some sort of registry is very difficult to get on to be a high priority item, as myeloma patients, when they're newly diagnosed, as many of you on the call know, is such a difficult time. And adding this onto the list of all the other thousands of things that need to be done certainly may not come to a priority. So what we're trying to do is work with local intergroups, the Dayton Community Oncology Program, the Columbus Community Oncology Program, and syncing up with Cleveland Clinic and University of Cincinnati to try to automatically get their patients enrolled as well. So it's a large effort for the initiative.
Well, it's certainly worth the effort, I believe. Is this something, you know, is it something that you, like you said, could be implemented on a mandatory basis at each one of these facilities, meaning that, you know, it just happens as part of the process? Somebody doesn't have to necessarily sign up for it.
That's, in some cases, the problem with this relates a lot to the idea that most Americans are concerned about their data. And at a time when data is sometimes violated and passwords are so important and everyone's life, or at least many people's life, is increasingly electronic, I think pushing to have a patient-centered viewpoint is important at this point, right now, so that patients really can say, okay, this sounds interesting. We want to make sure that patients know what's going on with their data, but we don't want to burden them with 7 different forms to sign so that they think they're buying a house, which is how most consent forms feel like in the U.S. when you're participating in a clinical trial. So to try to deal with that, our ohiomyeloma.org website allows patients to sign up online. They don't have to really sign anything. Unless they're on an iPad or an iPhone where they want to sign, they can. And this allows people to get through a couple buttons quickly and sign up, and allows us on the back end to then talk to their physician, grab their records, go through it, parse it, and add it into the database so it becomes searchable, but in an anonymous format.
Doctor, doesn't this skew the data in the way, for example, overall survival statistics are so great for people that attend support groups, if you will.
Right.
And the reason is they tend to be informed patients, and sometimes they tend to be healthier, so they participate.
Absolutely.
And this system strikes me, you know, when I think about an older person who may not have a computer or just doesn't feel good, they're not going to be participating in this. You're going to end up with a healthier population.
Absolutely, and that's clearly the danger. And the goal is to reach out to every private practitioner in the state, not just those that come to Cleveland, come to Columbus. Not saying necessarily that we have a portion of patients that are all high socioeconomic class with low risk disease. I think, you know, our myeloma nurse practitioners would say different. But I think that we were trying to get a bunch of interventions out so that this becomes the standard for places in Lancaster, Zanesville, smaller cities around Ohio where they don't think, oh yeah, they got to go to Columbus to enroll on this trial. No, no, no. Everyone who has any type of MGUS, smoldering myeloma, gets presented this information and an opportunity to enroll to try to fight that bias. And in fact, there are community oncology intergroup programs that support observational protocols so that, again, it allows each location to get some credit for enrollment so that they can move this forward without having a selection bias. But I absolutely agree with you, Pat, that the goal is to avoid this selection bias that happens at so many large centers.
And this is considered a trial, basically. Somebody's signed.
It absolutely is. It's a clinical trial, although we're not trying anything out on patients. A lot of people think that every clinical trial has to be therapeutic. This is an observational trial.
So great. So Gary and myself and Priya and fellow bloggers and activists, we can help get the word out and maybe help you recruit some more Ohio participants.
We would love that. And, you know, we're just at a point now where our website has been live since about August of this year. And so we're trying to get the word out about ohiomyeloma.org.
Oh, God, that's wonderful. Cindy, the forgotten woman in the background. Cindy, are you there? Do you have a question for Dr. Hoffmeister?
Oh, yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Okay. That sounds like a wonderful initiative, Dr. Hoffmeister. Is most of Ohio on electronic medical records at this point? Do you know?
I would say that a good set, you know, most places are transitioning to a number of different types of electronic health record system. Cleveland Clinic and Ohio State are both using a wide-known medical record system called Epic, and other large practices have different electronic systems.
Okay. Would that help with the enrollment in this type of trial? Are those systems interconnect with each other or not really?
In general, that will help, What is the barrier now is getting the word out and getting more physicians and more patients onto the idea that participating in this initiative is a good thing and something that, you know, I think patients are very nervous that their data might be misused. Private practice physicians are worried that their patients will be stolen by academic centers. There's a lot of paranoia about this when, you know, overall the idea, and I think this smacks of socialized medicine a little bit, and as soon as you say that, instantly the Ohio population becomes polarized in terms of their support. But overall, having an observational protocol like this is going to get us to the next level in understanding what's going on with the disease today and ultimately creating a real-time community of patients in Ohio who can not only be aware of different resources that are available that are financial and social with support groups and also medical resources with clinical trials and new interventions. So I think this will in many ways serve patients as well as serving researchers at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea and something that I would definitely enroll in if they had that in New Jersey, because one of the things with the survival statistics from my hospital that always bothers me is sometimes I think depending on the location of your hospital and what type of population that your hospital serves and how sick the patients are when they enroll into your hospital, that may skew the results of your survival statistics. So although I'm a firm believer that you really need a myeloma specialist to guide your care, I don't look so much at statistics just because I think they can be skewed and misread. I don't know how you feel about that. I just know, like, you know, some of the things that I've read talked about that some survival, depending on your ethnicity, sometimes matters. Is there anything
I agree completely, you know, and I think that, you know, individual centers are almost always skewed. And so our goal is to combine data for the entire state to try to fight that skewing. And we always tell patients that, you know, especially patients who are driving hours to see us, is that we always recommend that patients have one doctor that just sees myeloma and one doctor that's local, if they're not local to a big city. And I think that the combination of efforts often allows for the most convenient and best care for patients.
And that's exactly what I do. I have a local oncologist who is guided by a myeloma specialist. I think I have the best of both worlds that way. I can get my treatment within 10 minutes of my house, but then if there's any problems or a change in treatment, I could talk to a specialist. And I think, you know, we can reassure a lot of local oncologists that the big myeloma specialists aren't there to take their business. I think more and more local oncologists may suggest to their patients to go to these specialists, not when their disease gets out of control, but at that initial diagnosis, and maybe become part of some kind of registry.
Sure.
I'm hoping. I guess another question I have, which is a little bit off topic, but something I was a little curious in. I just recently read that people that have the best functioning type of immune system seem to survive the longest with myeloma. Kind of makes sense to me. But is there any type of testing that could be done to see what's the functioning of your immune system? And also, is there anything that you could do to boost the functioning of your immune system?
In general, I mean, this is a common question and concern, you know, and despite GNC saying that they can boost the immune system, you know, really no one knows how both to measure or boost the immune system in a human. And so it's a huge black box in some ways, and that we don't know how best to measure the immune system on a day-to-day level. And it's really more that as far as the immune system and long-term survivors, it's kind of a chicken and the egg situation, as patients with the most responsive and least aggressive myeloma are going to have the most responsive immune system, because we see this in patients with who have both an autoimmune disease and myeloma, that is, when their myeloma flares, their autoimmune disease goes away, essentially. And when their myeloma goes in remission, their autoimmune disease will flare. And, you know, the idea is that the amount of disease control you have over your myeloma pretty much is an inversely proportional to your immune system. When your myeloma is in remission, your immune system is very good, whereas when your myeloma is relapsing, your immune system is not as good. And that's also when we start treating you, giving you things like dexamethasone, which impairs your immune function. So that further depresses your immune system.
Okay, thank you so much. Pat, do you have any other questions there?
Wonderful. You know, we have a list of questions that listeners send in ahead of time. Let's get to a couple of those. Dr. Kate writes, is the survival data changing for high-risk patients and with novel agents exclusively or only with a stem cell transplant?
In general, survival data for high-risk patients changed a little bit with the study of Velcade and the understanding that the use of Velcade allowed certain patients, such as those with a translocation between chromosomes 4 and 14, in a subgroup of those patients, they did just as well as long as they had Velcade as a large component of their treatment. Now, this is, again, based on averages, and transplant has been around for decades, and so it's not likely that transplant is going to be very effective in high-risk patients, and it's actually quite the opposite. Transplant is most effective for patients with low-risk disease that respond quickly to induction therapy. Those are the patients who are going to get the best response out of transplant and the longest periods of remission. What happens most in high-risk disease these days is not necessarily about the new drugs, because the new drugs are just coming into use, with carfilzomib being approved last year in July and pomalidomide being approved this year in February. So the survival data with use of those drugs is still a little bit a ways. What's coming out more is how we can better define high-risk disease and picking away at the patients who have deletion of the small arm of chromosome 17, the so-called 17p deleted or p53 deleted patients, and understanding that they are not all one group, and that some of them actually do much better than others. In addition, understanding that patients with deletion of the small arm of chromosome 1, a 1p deletion, combined with a 1q amplification or just alone, tends to be a much larger risk factor than previously understood and is therefore being added to a lot of FISH panels for newly diagnosed patients.
You do a nice job explaining a very complicated subject, Doctor. I followed that. I'm not sure everybody did, but there are certainly parts that I think patients are starting to get. And another argument for being informed patients, you're going to like Alma's question. Alma asks, Dr. Hoffmeyer recently published an article about using immune therapy with engineered cells to treat multiple myeloma. Could you discuss this potential therapy and when it might be evaluated in clinical trials?
Well, Alma, very nice of you to notice. We have the benefit here at OSU working with a fabulous scientist named Junhua Yu, who developed a chimeric antigen receptor technology to reprogram immune cells, both T cells and NK cells, to express on their cell surface a targeting protein which makes those immune cells search for myeloma cells that on their cell surface have a protein called CS1. Now, CS1, you may have heard about, is the target for a naked antibody called elotuzumab, and that trial and that drug is in phase 3 trials. But we'd love to be able to reprogram the immune system to target all CS1 expressing cells and kill them. We're in the midst of planning two trials with this technology, looking reprogramming both NK cells and T cells for patients with relapsed myeloma. I can't say when it's going to come out. It's still probably a year away from actually hitting patients. But this gene therapy technology is certainly extraordinarily exciting and quite a privilege to be able to talk to patients that this is actually going to come to pass. As gene therapy, I never would have thought 10 years ago I would have been able to have the tools and science in place to be able to do it, and we're looking forward to it proceeding.
Well, that is exciting, and Doctor, from time to time I get the opportunity to do some freelance medical writing about cancer other than myeloma. For example, I'll cover ASH, the hematology meet, or the oncology meetings in Chicago, and I noticed a couple things. First, that myeloma seems to be a little behind some of the other major cancers with their immune therapy work, and maybe that's not fair. Maybe they just don't get as much publicity. The other thing I noticed is how few patients are helped. Everybody's all excited about a couple new breast cancer and a couple new melanoma breakthroughs, but, you know, it's the same drill where it's only helping 20-25% of the patients. Can you explain why that would be, why you have a big breakthrough, an immunotherapy type of thing, and it only helps one out of four, one out of five patients?
I think that the best way to think about this is that therapy for the immune system is just getting started. We've been dealing with poisons for almost a century, and it has been a mixed bag. And very few cancers are cured by giving poisons. You know, Hodgkin's and testicular cancer aside, you know, those are two examples where giving a sequence of poisons has actually produced cures. But most cancers are not going to be cured with poison. In fact, they need a targeted therapy, and they may need multiple targeted therapies. And we are just at an age now when we're turning on the immune system to fight cancer cells, and cancer cells, let's face it, are extraordinarily difficult to distinguish from the normal cell from which they came. So we are at an age when immune therapy is still not going to be more than 20%, and it's going to be touted as a big breakthrough. And 20% is going to be thought, as patients, as completely inadequate. And you're absolutely right. But I would urge you that there's got to be some base hits. You can't always hit a home run, and most people don't start out hitting home runs. And immune therapy is just taking its first swings. And I think that imagine to yourself how quickly things would happen if, as it stands, right now only 2%, roughly about 2% of cancer patients go on to a clinical trial, have their experience recorded, and get a new therapy. Imagine how quick things would happen, how many swings we'd get if 98% of people had the opportunity to enroll. So I'll take the soapbox here and just say, hey, listen, always try, if you can, to get an opportunity to go see somebody who does myeloma exclusively. Those are the people who are going to have access to clinical trials, and maybe you find a clinical trial that's exciting to you. And to your point about melanoma, these PD-1 inhibitor drugs have had great responses, but only in a percentage of patients, and it hasn't been fabulous. But for my dad, who has metastatic melanoma, he's on a clinical trial and getting a PD-1 inhibitor, and it meant that the first therapy he got didn't work, but this one worked. And even though it's 20%, that 20% is the difference between life and death. And so these immune therapies are coming up. We have a PD-1 inhibitor coming up in next 3 months at Ohio State, combined with Revlimid, essentially doing two immune therapies together. And we have another trial about a year away using multiple immune therapies. So I'd urge you to think that the immune therapies are just taking their first swings at bat, and it could be an exciting time.
That's great. Incredible answer. Thank you, Doctor. And how exciting that your father is actually responding to something like this. That's wonderful.
Pat, I have
absolutely
a question.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me, Pat?
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, Cindy, go ahead.
Okay. You know, can we take things back just a little bit of a step? Immune therapy. I've heard of it. Can Dr. Hofmeister explain it in layman's terms what exactly immune therapy is, as opposed to a targeted therapy, as opposed to the poisons of chemotherapy? Just to kind of give us an
sure
idea of the difference between the different types of therapy used for myeloma.
Sure. I think of standard chemotherapy. Most people think of patients that are bald. that's what standard poisons do. They, you put them in a dish with rapidly dividing cells, and those cells die. That's straight-up old-time chemotherapy. Targeted therapies are, in general, thought to be therapies that just kill a group of cells. Now, it may not always be the cancerous cells, but in most of the times it is. For instance, Velcade and Revlimid are both evidence of targeted therapies. Revlimid is a cereblon binding drug, and Velcade attacks the myeloma cell in not really a clear way, and it has off-target effects. It can cause nerve damage and tingling and numbness, but these are so-called targeted therapies. That gene therapy trial that I was talking about is a targeted cellular therapy. We're trying to infuse into patients immune cells that are targeting a specific protein on the cell surface. When most people think of immune therapy, they're trying to think of changing the machinery of how we fight infection so that it thinks, so that your body's immune system thinks that your myeloma is an intruder and kills it. And the immune system, as I've said, is difficult to really quantitate and measure in a human, but tweaking the immune system is what a lot of these immune therapy antibodies and inhibitors do. And the PD-1 inhibitor, typical of your immune system, turns off an off switch. And a lot of the immune system has so many checks and balances to keep us steady and healthy that with cancer cells, sometimes things can be tweaked so that your own immune system can suddenly attack a cancer cell that has been sitting pretty for so long in your body. So the essence of the immune system is trying to use your essence of immune therapy, I'm sorry, is trying to manipulate your own immune system to kill the cancer cells inside.
So and you do that by injecting some type of foreign substance inside your body to trick the immune system into fighting it?
Yes. Usually it's to give things that either excite parts of your immune system or inhibit or turn off parts of your immune system and thereby use the whole the machinery of your immune system to, instead of ignoring your myeloma, suddenly pay attention to it and kill it. Because your immune cells are perfectly capable of killing myeloma cells, but they think of the myeloma cells as part of you. And unless we can tweak the immune system to think of your myeloma cells essentially as foreign, we're not using it effectively.
Okay, so maybe if you could think of somehow putting something on those myeloma cells that are like a virus, and then your immune system can then go attack those myeloma cells if you attach something to them, something like that. Would that make
love
sense?
Love your thinking.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just trying to figure out this whole process.
Thank you, Doctor. That was great. Gary, would you want to jump back in? Do you have any follow-up questions?
Well, I think Priya is...
Didn't mean to wake you up. Sorry.
No. I think Priya is trying to get in, isn't she? Do you have somebody online, Priya?
Yes, thank you, Gary. Yes, but I think we have Lucy online with us here. She would like to ask a question. Lucy, you're live on air. Please ask your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my question, and I'm really enjoying the program. I'm learning so much. Thank you very much. Mine is more of a general observation. I know when I was diagnosed with myeloma, gosh, coming up on 2 years ago, my oncologist at the time did not educate me on the importance of finding a myeloma specialist. She was, seemed to be mostly knowledgeable about myeloma and how to treat it. But my big question, or I guess my observation, is how do we communicate to newly diagnosed myeloma patients who are completely overwhelmed anyway with their diagnosis? I would venture to say most of us probably had never even heard of myeloma until then. How do we communicate with them the importance of finding a specialist and the importance of, participating in clinical trials when generally our, you know, first concern is quickly, let's get me treated yesterday already. And, you know, trying to bridge that gap and trying to even talk to maybe general oncologists that they should be communicating to patients that maybe I'm not the best one to treat you. And that's kind of a tough message to try to get across, right?
I think that's a very tough message to get across. But I think that in general, the way to make this happen is not to try to change necessarily the physicians only. But this is something where we need to change the whole way we think of these essentially rare diseases. Because this isn't breast cancer. This isn't lung cancer, colon cancer. That's the bread and butter of your average oncologist. What we need to do is change the idea about, for both patients and physicians, change the schema of how we really think about myeloma treatment and also treatment for almost everything. Basically, if you have cancer, you should be looking for somebody who's an expert in your cancer. And that should be the message, not just for myeloma patients, for every cancer patient. And I think that the more we focus just on myeloma, the more I think we lose, because these general rules will allow patients to have more education, more specific visits, access to clinical trials. In all ways, this is good. What's bad is that geography hurts us. The U.S. is large. It's not like Spain. We're not like England. We can't get all of our patients all in one thing, because just to see me, some patients come many hours by car. So I think that we also, at the same time, we should use technology to be able to go across geographic borders and say, hey, listen, I could still get care, but I don't need to travel 4 hours to get it done. I can have a blood test sent to my doc. We can FaceTime and have a visit. And this is ideally a different way to get a lot of the same service, the same education, the same access to treatments that we can't currently do. And I think that patients and doctors both need to be on the same page to push for innovation. And right now, I think that academic hospitals are generally thought to be for patients of high socioeconomic class, particular ethnicities, and those with low risk or terribly high risk disease with no other hope. And I think we need to think of cancer differently.
I agree. Thank you.
Doctor, along that same line, when you talk about states, your measurement system that you're suggesting, is that something that could be expanded to other states, other locations? You know, if it's successful with you, expanded outside of that. And in addition to just multiple myeloma, could it also be expanded, if successful, in Ohio, to other cancers as well?
Absolutely. I think that we are limited right now in that we just think that doctors are writing little handwritten notes on a sheet, difficult to describe, difficult to read, and then they write a prescription, give it to the patient, and walk away. This is how you can deal with a cold. But this is not how you want your cancer dealt with. You actually instead want to have physicians have the history and have the expectation that their notes are all going to be templated, and that all the data from their templated notes is going to be loaded into a large database specific for that patient's disease, and so that all of this will be searchable in an anonymous fashion. This is the new way to provide medical care, and yeah, it's not particularly sexy, but tracking data and making sure that we have access to the best data, with instead of looking at a database of a couple hundred people and lauding it as the largest and most extensive database, we should be having databases of millions of myeloma patients and have it be searchable by anyone that wants it. This is the direction I think things are heading.
So you
Doctor,
could, in fact,
before we run out of time,
mine your data.
Gary, I'm sorry. Before we
sure,
run
no
out
problem.
Of time, are you familiar with or possibly even participating with the MMRF's program, their Compass program, and they have a patient community program. They're trying to do basically the same thing, and I'm wondering if we're going to run into that time old situation where you have 30, 40, 50 people all reinventing the wheel and starting their own databases, although I suppose at some point they could be merged. Could you address that?
The Compass trial is a 1,000-patient trial that will allow a lot of very cool correlative science to go on 1,000 patients. And in myeloma, this is the second largest clinical trial practically ever. And so it in itself is going to look, but that's an observational trial, look, and a lot of the deliverable there is a lot of correlative science. Now, that is one thing there, a prospective trial for set number of patients at a set number of centers. We are participating in Compass. We've enrolled patients. We fully applaud and support the efforts. Ours is trying to get not just patients that are newly diagnosed. We're looking for anyone alive who has myeloma or a precursor disease and to have them participate, because we believe that we don't want your bone marrow just to do some fancy correlative science. This is valuable and important. We want to change how you think of your disease, how you think of your physicians, and to provide resources for you. We want you to have better treatment. And Compass provides just observation and a lot of correlative science, and we want the Ohio Myeloma Initiative is, in essence, a way to start a relationship. And we want, because the only way I think we're going to stamp out cancer, and especially myeloma, is if we're all involved. And this is one way to let everyone get involved.
Well, Doctor, you're my new hero. That sounds...
Scott, we have one more listener lined up for a question. The person calling in from 7189836757, you're live on air. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Doctor. I have a question. I'm smoldering, and I'm wondering what type of advice you could provide to me in a twofold sense. Number one, I would be delighted to try to enroll and participate in a clinical trial, but there really are very few available outside of perhaps the ones using Rev and Dex, which I'm really not keen on. I'm looking more towards the immunotherapy ones, but unfortunately they're just so limited and I don't have access to these trials. I mean, there's one out in one of the major centers using a PD-1 inhibitor, which I would really love to participate in, but I have no way of getting there. So from a treatment standpoint, I'm looking to try to do something to forestall the progression because the watch and wait is just something that I'm not comfortable doing. So what would you recommend?
Well, I think that smoldering myeloma is terribly difficult to get smoldering myeloma patients on a treatment protocol. Just as you said, they're not excited about X, Y, and Z, and they want something very specific. Uh-huh. It's very difficult to meet everyone's expectations. When we had a clinical trial here at OSU for smoldering myeloma, we enrolled zero patients. Uh-huh. It was an anti-IL-6 antibody therapy, and no smoldering myeloma patient wanted to get it. And the reason they didn't is because when they looked at the consent form, they looked at all the potential side effects and said, "Are you nuts? I feel fine." So smoldering myeloma remains a very difficult precursor disease, because we want to intervene right then, before patients develop symptoms, signs of actual cancer. But we struggle to get a therapy yet that has the appropriate risk-to-benefit ratio. So it remains a big trouble, and I don't have a perfect answer. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Priya, we're probably just about out of time, aren't we?
Yes, just about. Maybe a quick question, last question. Maybe we have time for just one more question. I think Kate had written in asking, many of the programs emphasize information and statistics related to younger myeloma patients. What are the statistical gains in the age group over 65? And what studies have been or are being done for the survival rates of older patients? Is there data available for older patients in each risk category, especially high-risk older patients? And how is comorbidity handled in these studies?
That's not an easy one. Essentially, I think when you look at the data for different comorbidities, the IFM data, the French myeloma group, probably has the best data breaking it down by age, risk profile, and they use a combination of transplant and Velcade and Revlimid-based therapies. They provide the most data, and let's face it, comorbidities are not well dealt with. It's one of our interests here at Ohio State is looking at frailty, measuring in essence physiologic age, because every 70-year-old is not the same, and there's nothing that happens on your 70th birthday that's really all that exciting. But the data we have, especially for transplant, says that your transplant-related risk of death more than doubles after age 70. So, and for patients with 80 years old and up, the average overall survival was often less than a year back about five years ago based on patients treated early in 2000s. It's doubled that recently, but a lot of that data is just coming out. I think this and Gary's emphasis on looking at overall survival data from various groups and various regimens is helpful, but I want to see people get more into, okay, I want to look at survival who are greater than age 70, who have this high-risk profile, what happened to them? And I don't want to look at every perfect patient who enrolled on a clinical trial with absolutely no comorbidities. Let's look for the average patient, because that's something we in the U.S. have a huge difficulty doing, right? 90% of us think of ourselves as better than average drivers. Well, that doesn't make much sense now, does it? You can't. 90% of people can't be better than average. And I think your willingness there to look at comorbidities allows us to get a more real way to look at survival. And that's what we need to create databases and tools to allow patients to look at.
Amen, doctor.
Thank you, doctor.
Thank you for all
thank
your
you,
work.
Dr. Hoffmeister.
Absolutely.
For joining us today. It was great having you here. Gary, Pat, and Cynthia, thank you so much for everything that you do for the myeloma community. To all our listeners, thank you for your support, and we look forward to having all of you join us on the 21st of November for our next myeloma panel discussion. The expert on the show is Dr. Chanan Khan of Mayo Clinic. Our next support group meeting is on November 25th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and we are discussing a very relevant and informative topic, understanding lab tests and results, with oncology nurse Anne McNeil of John Cancer Center at HUMC. For more details of our upcoming shows, please visit trialex.com/curetalk or mail me, priya@trialex.com. To search for myeloma trials, please use MMRF's trial search tool at myeloma.trialex.com/ask. The link for today's show will be sent via email to all participants. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, doctor.
Thank you, Priya, and thank you, doctor.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Bye, doll.
Bye, Cindy.
Bye-bye.